down the narrow walkway in the aft end of the module. He did not like the thought of being exposed to hard radiation. He had taken a lifetime's worth of radiation back in his early days working in space. Much more of a dose would kill him, he knew. It wouldn't be an easy way to go, either. As he lifted the covers protecting the electron gun's innards and checked them for the 11th time since they'd launched out of lunar orbit, Dan thought, maybe Stavanger's right. Get a jolt of nanomachines. Let them clean up the damage the radiation's done. Rebuild me from the inside. Oh, I won't be able to go back to Earth, so what? What's down there that I'd miss so much? He knew the answer even as he asked the question. Sea breezes, blue skies and soft sunsets, birds flying, flowers, huge, ugly, brutal cities teeming with life, vineyards. Dan suddenly realized that no one had yet tried to grow wine grapes off Earth. Maybe that's what I'll do when I retire. Settle down and watch my vineyards grow. The intercom speaker set into the narrow walkway to overhead carried Poncho's voice. Dan, you ready for me to light up the guns? The electron guns were just as good as they'd been all the other times he'd inspected them. Closing the cover on the one on his right, Dan answered, You may fire when ready, Gridley. Poncho retorted, I don't know who this Gridley guy is, but I can't rev up the guns so you close both their covers and seal them right and proper. Aye, aye, Skipper, Dan said. By the time he made it back to the bridge, Poncho was nowhere in sight. Amanda sat alone in the right-hand seat, and the bridge was rocking to the beat of high-intensity pop music. As soon as she saw Dan come through the hatch, Amanda snapped the music off. Poncho's in the loo, she said as Dan slid into the command pilot seat. How's the storm? Precisely on track. Amanda tapped at one of her touchscreens. It displayed a simplified map of the inner solar system. The orbits of Earth and Mars shone as thin lines of blue and red, respectively. The position of Star Power 1 was a blinking bright yellow dot. Lopsided gray miasma was almost touching the dot. Dan's mouth went dry. I hate these things, he mumbled. It missed the Earth completely. Mars as well. But it's going to swamp us. Actually, Amanda said, we'll merely be brushed by it. A few hours, that's all. That's good. Our own velocity is helping a lot, you know. An ordinary spacecraft coasting along the way they do would be in the cloud for days on end. Dan had no desire to be in the cloud for even 10 minutes. He changed the subject as much to get away from the fear building up inside him as any other reason. A friendlier you and Fuchs. Amanda's brows shot up. Lars? He's very earnest. About his work. Nothing more. That's all there is to it? Yes. Dan thought it over. Two healthy young people locked in this sardine can for a couple of weeks. Of course, there's Poncho and me to chaperone them. Dan grinned to himself. Damn. Like being a teenager's father. Poncho returned to the bridge. Hey, boss, get out of my chair. Yes'm, said Dan. The plasma cloud hit them less than an hour later. There was no buffeting, no clanging of alarms, nothing to tell them that they were being engulfed in the cloud of killing radiation, except the rising curves of fire engine red on their radiation monitoring screens. Poncho did not consider the storm so dangerous that someone had to be on the bridge at all times. She came into the wardroom and joined the others for dinner. Dan ate mechanically, not really tasting his food, not really hearing the conversation. Double-damned radiation, he kept thinking. I hate this. Despite two steaming mugs of coffee, he felt cold inside. But the others seemed completely unfazed by the storm. After the meal, Dan said goodnight to them all and went to his compartment. He dreamed of floating helplessly in space, slowly freezing as the sun glowered at him.
Nanotechnology Laboratory.
Long past midnight,
Chris Cardenas sat alone in her office in Cellini's nanotechnology lab. The rest of the lab was empty, darkened to its nighttime lighting level. She had agreed to have dinner with Martin Humphreys because she wanted to get the man to warn Dan Randolph about the nanomachines that she had planted in his vessel, virus-sized disassemblers that once were known as gobblers. They were the reason that nanotechnology was banned on Earth and under careful supervision at Cellini. Quis custodiet ipsos custodes, she asked herself. Who will watch the watchman? Some Roman asked that question more than 2,000 years ago, Cardenas knew. All nanotech work was under very strict control in Cellini. No one was allowed to work with gobblers. They had killed people. They had even been used to commit murder. If they ever got loose, they could destroy all Cellini. The medical work had to be supervised down to the nanometer because the therapeutic nanobugs that took apart plague in a person's arteries or destroyed tumors atom by atom were forms of gobblers, nothing less. If they ever got loose, if their programming was ever so subtly altered. That was why Chris Cardenas's primary duty as head of all nanotech work at Cellini was to protect against such a catastrophe. She watched over every aspect of the work done in the nanotech lab. But who will watch the watchman? She had produced a microscopic batch of gobblers for Humphreys, specifically tailored to damage Star Power One enough so Dan would have to turn the ship around and limp back to Cellini. Humphreys had promised that he would obtain permission for her to visit Earth again, to see her daughters and her grandchildren. Now he was offering to bring them up here. Even better. But the price. Dan Randolph and the other people on that ship could get killed. Is that what Humphreys really wants? She asked herself. If I warned Dan now, he'd have to return to Cellini. Flat simple. But Humphreys wants to wait another day or so, let Dan get to the inner fringes of the belt, and then tell him that his ship's going to fail. Or maybe he won't warn Dan at all. Cardenas sat up straight in her desk chair. That's it, she told herself. He wants to kill Dan and the rest of the crew. She knew it with the certainty of revealed truth. What can I do about it? Warn Dan, she answered her own question. Warn him now. But how, she wondered. I can't just pick up a phone and put a call through to him. They're out past the orbit of Mars by now. I've got to get to someone in the Astro office, someone who can put me through to Dan. Maybe that big Australian bodyguard of his. What's his name? George something.
Martin Humphreys could not sleep, despite the exertions he'd been through with a raven-haired woman lying beside him. Nominally an environmentalist on the consulting staff of Humphreys Trust, the young woman's favorite environment seemed to be a bedroom with plenty of furniture to play on, as far as Humphreys could determine. She was sleeping peacefully, and he was wide awake. Dr. Cardenas. Humphreys was worried about her. Even the lure of seeing her grandchildren wasn't going to outweigh her overdeveloped sense of honor, he thought. She wants to warn Randolph. He's probably figured out that I want the son of a bitch dead. He sat up in the bed and glanced at the woman sleeping beside him. Slowly, carefully, he pulled the silk sheet down from her shoulders. Even with no lights in the room except the green glow from the digital clock, he could see that her body was smooth, flawless, perfectly proportioned. Too bad she's heading back to Earth in a few days. Cardenas, he reminded himself sternly. She's going to try to warn Randolph, he felt certain. Maybe that's a good thing. If Randolph turns back now, Amanda will come back with him. With him. She won't be coming back to me. She doesn't want me, that's why she ran off with him. Cardenas warns them they'll come back here together to gloat at me. He squeezed his eyes shut and tried to drive out the mental images of Randolph and Amanda together. I've got to think this through carefully, logically. For Cardenas to warn Randolph, she'll have to get somebody here in Cellini to set up the message for her. She'll probably go to Astro. That's where Randolph's people are. And if she asks them to let her put through a call to Randolph, they'll ask her why. Sooner or later, she'll tell them why. Martin Humphreys has bugged the Star Power ship with nanomachines. And then they'll know all about it. Conclusion? For my own protection, I've got to stop her from talking to anyone at Astro. I've got to stop her from even trying to warn Randolph. I've got to stop her. Period. When Dan awoke from his troubled sleep,